With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0.
Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Get that. Welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm broadcasting live. It's not live. We're live, but you're not seeing this live. From the NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, here in Dallas and Dallas, Texas. And the person joining me to my left here is my good friend, Susan Newton, who I just decided to bring in because this is her first NRB.
Yes.
And I'm an advocate for the National Religious Broadcasters because we're just having a blast here. So we're going to talk to her a little bit about that. And also we're going to delve into some of the news of the day. And so I just wanted to get her opinion on some of the things that we're hearing. So there's an adjunct professor that is now suggesting, hey, sex work on the side is really the best thing that young people can do to promote themselves early in their careers.
What?
She's part of the University of Ottawa. She's an adjunct professor. She said this on Twitter, doing sex work on the side is the best thing young people can do early in their careers. She said, hey, I know this is an unpopular opinion, but, you know, Your early career prospects are unstable, unpredictable, with low pay. They're likely contract work. They're very much exploitive or exploitative, I suppose, she wrote. And so she said, that's how capitalism works, Susan. Parents out here are saying young people can be exploited in sex work, but literally, that's capitalism. Spoken like a true communist, right?
My lordy.
She said quite literally that's any kind of work. So I think what she's advocating for is that people shouldn't have to work.
What is our world coming to? This is ridiculous.
No, we really want some deep thoughts on this.
I'm sorry.
You're just struggling to digest the whole thing.
Yeah.
You have to understand, I just sprung this on her. This is totally not fair.
Totally befuddled me.
You raised four children.
Yes.
Didn't you want some of them at least to go into sex work?
No.
No, that wasn't one of your goals?
They were virgins before they got married. So I think we're kind of on the other side of this story. Funny. No.
So you've heard it here first, folks. It is possible to remain celibate until marriage.
Yes.
And in fact, it is still one of those archaic things that's still practiced today.
Yes.
Celibacy before marriage.
And it's a good
thing.
Would
you advocate for that?
I would. I would.
You think that's a good thing?
Yeah,
we don't have to get too personal. I have a friend who...
exactly.
All right. Moving on.
I'm sorry, I didn't take that seriously.
The CDC, there's a safety group now that says there's a link between this rare heart inflammation in young people after a COVID shot. It's interesting because the headline, this is off CNBC, and they are a renowned news organization. And they literally, the headline is not proper grammar at all. But they are saying that there's a link. Now, I just want to point out the definition of a vaccine is it's a preparation of a weakened or killed pathogen, such as a bacterium or virus, or a portion of the pathogen structure that upon administration to an individual simulates antibody production or cellular immunity against the pathogen, but is incapable of causing severe infection.
That's the way I understand.
First of all, I think that they've updated this definition because it didn't used to include the pathogen structure piece.
Okay.
But regardless, that last part is incapable of causing severe infection, and yet we're seeing infections develop from these shots.
Dare we not call them?
No, we're not. Well, we're not supposed to say that because YouTube's going to ban me.
Oh, sure.
So I'm just going to read from CNBC. A CDC safety group said there's likely association, and they put it in quotes because they're doubting that that the CDC actually knows what it's doing. Why would they know what they're doing? They're saying there's a likely association between a rare heart inflammatory condition in adolescents. These are young people, typically males, young adults, mostly after they've received their second. So the first shot seems to be perfectly fine. But apparently the second shot
not so good.
Is where complications occur. And folks, I'm not making fun of this. Mm-hmm. Young people have died, or it has been alleged that people have died as a result of the shot. But they have documented more than 1,200 cases of myocarditis or pericarditis. That's inflammation of either the tissue surrounding the heart or some of the tissue surrounding the heart, mostly in people 30 and under.
My goodness.
As a result of, they don't say as a result, but these people develop this condition shortly after receiving Pfizer or Moderna's COVID vaccine. Mm. And that's according to a series of slide presentations published Wednesday for a meeting of the Centers of Disease Control.
Makes me sad.
It does make me sad also, especially because what is the risk? Do you know what the risk of severe injury or death from COVID itself? Do you know what that is in people under 30?
No, please tell me. I know it's low.
Yeah, it's so low, it's off the scales low. Wow. In other words, it's within the margin of error low. In other words, it's so low that it's negligible. So like a big fat zero.
Ridiculous.
That's how low it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet the CDC and other agencies are advocating for young people to get the vaccine. Myocarditis is the inflammation of the heart muscle. And a pericarditis is the inflammation of the membrane surrounding the heart. Okay. Yeah, that's right. I got that wrong. Shame on me. Do more research, Sam. No, I don't have time. Okay. In other news, the Florida governor just signed a new bill that requires K-12 public schools to hold a moment of silence each day.
For?
We don't know. Shh. Silent. You would be silent. I'll tell you why. Governor DeSantis thinks, apparently he says this, it's important to be able to provide each student the ability every day to reflect and be able to pray as they see fit.
Okay.
Pro? Against?
Sounds like it could be good.
He's a Republican governor.
Okay.
He signed this bill at the shul of Bell Harbor in Surfside.
Okay.
And he said this. The idea that you can just push God out of every institution and be successful, I'm sorry, our founding fathers did not believe that.
Okay.
So he's one of those founding fathers zealots.
See, I start to be a little doubtful when I hear something coming from the government. So I needed more information.
You're just a skeptic.
I am. So this is good.
This is
a good thing.
Strangely, there are opponents of the legislation. They're criticizing the bill.
I'm sorry.
They're saying that it's actually requiring prayer in schools.
Oh, my goodness. Seriously?
And this is coming from the Democrat state rep, Omari Hardy.
Of course.
He voted against the bill. He said, this is terrible. We shouldn't be doing this.
No silence.
No silence. There shall be no silence in schools. Can you imagine voting against a moment of silence?
And it said it for how they want to do it.
I don't want people to be silent.
Stop being silent. Speak. Speak.
Speak. You must speak. All right.
This is fun.
It is kind of fun.
I mean, sad stuff, but fun to be with you.
40% of teachers say civics education should focus on critical race theory.
Okay.
Are you familiar with critical race theory, Susan?
Basically.
And tell me what tell me what your interpretation of critical race theory is.
I don't know if I want to.
Go ahead. It's fine. It's just between us
and the
rest of the
people. See, I don't want to get you banned. I think you should speak. I really do.
Okay.
What if I say something that's like, okay, they're off.
Okay.
Kick them off.
So the shortest version that I've heard, and I'm quoting Dave Rubin on this.
Okay.
The critical race theory is defined this way. Shut up, Whitey.
Okay.
That's critical race theory.
She's right. That's what I was going to say.
40% of teachers say that it should, that civics education should include critical race theory. So I will tell you right now that if you tell them not to teach it, they will teach it anyway because they believe that it should be taught.
See, I feel like I want to be hopeful and think that that's wrong and that teachers have a heart that is for children.
But let me ask you this. If you know Christian teachers in the school system.
Correct.
That are being told that they have to teach Islam.
That's right.
Do you hope that they don't teach Islam to the degree that they're being encouraged to teach Islam or something
like that? And they could potentially lose their job. right?
But yeah. So do you hope that they don't? Or
I hope that they don't. But now I hear what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
So I doubt that the people.
No,
who,
you're right.
Right.
I'm sorry. You're right.
And Governor DeSantis also just signed in. He's my governor. He's not yours because you still
Stop
live in California.
It.
He also just signed in. Where is it? That he wants them not to teach. No, sorry. He wants it to absolutely include teaching that communism is bad in the curriculum.
Okay.
Now he's placating a bunch of people who fled communism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those idiots that left Cuba. They left the promised land to come here for some reason.
Absolutely.
So he's really just placating them by telling them that, hey, we're going to teach other people that communism's bad because it's important to the people who fled communism.
In his state.
In his state.
Yeah.
Well, and Haiti has no jurisdiction anywhere else. So,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm all for it, but here's the problem. You can't convince a communist that communism is bad, and you can't convince a communist to teach that communism is bad. And the teachers' unions are communist.
Wow.
So.
You went there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to end the way that he thinks.
You have logic.
Did you see that the Loudoun County the Loudoun County Board School Board meeting, and all the parents showed up, and it got rowdy.
No, I heard about it.
It got rowdy.
Yeah.
What'd you hear?
I just heard that it was pretty crazy. So
yeah.
That's. Yeah.
And they actually stopped public comments. So you're supposed to hear public comments. The meeting was scheduled to go for an extended period of time, and they just cut it off. They're like, we can't do this.
Hello? Is this mic on?
Yes.
Of? Yeah.
And they shut it down. And then the police came in, and they actually arrested two people.
No.
Yeah. Because those unruly parents started singing.
They love their kids.
Well, they love their kids, which is not to be tolerated.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they started singing, but you'll never guess what hate song they started singing. Yes, the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, dear.
Yes, how dare they. That is a battle song. That song is filled with hate and battle words. But in the rocket's red glare,
mm-hmm.
it's like they're glorifying rocketry,
mm-hmm.
which is only able to be glorified if Hamas sends them. I believe that concludes our time with my
goodness.
Friend Supernew. But before we go, tell us your thoughts on the NRB.
I love this place. There you go. A little bit of more energy. I just love it. I had no idea what I was coming up for. It's your fault.
It's mine.
It's been so good.
Yes. What's
been
good?
I've been weepy all week.
What's been
good? But it's been good weepy.
But why?
The Lord is present. Let me tell you, this is amazing. This is amazing.
Okay, what's your number one experience here, best experience?
Well, first of all, getting to hang with you.
Okay, they're watching.
I'm sorry. Okay. I wanted to, I've taken the classes and they've all been good, but the...
What class did you take?
Worship. Worship.
Worship. Morning worship.
Oh, my goodness.
We went to a breakfast.
If I could, I'd be on my knees, and it was just amazing.
We went to a breakfast and Josh Aaron performed.
Yes.
He's remarkable. He's got a very lovely voice.
So good.
And so that was really a treat.
Yeah. Took me what back classes to my childhood love of my Lord.
Yeah. What classes did you take?
I'm trying to think. There's been a few. Oh my gosh, I'm on the spot again.
No, did you take any kind of screenwriting courses or broadcasting courses?
Yeah,
or?
There's been... Oh, gosh, I'm sorry.
When the lights are on, when the camera's on.
That's horrible. I'll interrupt, I'll stick my head in with on my list.
Yes,
what
exactly,
I did.
Exactly.
Right now I'm just a total blank.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Well, you took some classes.
I let you down, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. You took some classes. The National Religious Broadcasters, you know, if you want to know what goes on here, just look at the website. It's all on the website.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm going to say they had a, real quick, they had a, at the very beginning, they had people stand up, who's here for the first time. And so my husband and I raised our hand. And then they had people say, who's been here for 20 times? Who's been here for 25? And they kept going and going. And people have been here for a really long time. I'm kind of going, what? That was at the very beginning. Now I'm like, I want to be one of those people.
Right.
20 years from now, who's saying, I've been here for 20 times because it's that good.
And do you think that part of the reason it's that good is because we are here right after COVID, in a sense?
I think a bit. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Freedom.
There's something about meeting in person, especially after you've been deprived of meeting in person for so long.
And no social distancing. I just love it. So
no social distancing, no masks. Although some people here are wearing masks. But typically they're the workers.
That. Yeah, they have to. Some of them have to.
I don't believe they have
to. Or they feel they have to.
They feel they have
That's
to.
That's it right there.
Because they haven't done the research and they haven't seen.
They didn't get the message.
Yeah, they haven't seen the, yeah. They didn't get the email message from Fauci saying there's no reason to wear masks ever.
Yeah. Oh,
all right,
goodness.
So we're going to take
so
a break.
Fun.
I got to take a quick break. For those of you on radio and on the podcast, I'll be right back. And for those of you watching on video, tune in for another installment in a little bit. Thank
you.
This is the Sam Sorbo Show.
Bye.
Welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm joined now by my good friend, Yvette Hampton. She's a filmmaker. She's also a homeschooler. And I'm going to stop using that word, but she's also a self-teacher. And we're still at the NRB, and it's very exciting to be here. Have you been to the NRB in the past?
I have.
Yeah.
This is my second time.
Second time. Were you at last year's?
No, 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
In Nashville.
All right. So how does this one compare to the one a few years back?
This one has been great for me because I've been more involved. Last time I actually had my girls with me. And so I was kind of trying to juggle.
Distracted a bit.
Right. Talking to people and networking and watching my girls. But now they're older and they don't need to be with me. So, so it's been great.
Oh,
it's
mama, you're on your own.
I know.
Now, but I'm talking about like the energy and the size, the number of people.
Compared to last time?
Yeah.
Oh, that.
About the same?
I think about the same, if I remember correctly.
So I will say I find the energy this time to be sort of through the roof compared to previous times. And I just, and maybe it's just me sort of imposing my own feelings on my experience.
Sure.
I just feel like people are so thrilled to be seen.
Yes.
To have their masks off, to smile at people.
Hugging, shaking hands.
And
human connection.
Yes. And that gives me hope because I feel like there's going to be life after COVID.
Yes.
And I feel like people are going to take the masks off.
Right.
Even though there are a lot of people, not here, but they're, you know, across the U.S. that are still very fearful and whatever. I see people going, wait, I don't have to wear the mask? Oh, yeah. No, I'm done with that.
Yes.
Even though there are a few people, but I think they're going to be the minority that are like, put the mask on. And
right. Yes, it feels very normal.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, it feels very normal, and it's exciting. There's like
old
an excitement
normal,
about
not
it.
New normal.
Right. New. Right, perfect. Well said. And I'm concerned about kids, that the kids have normalized mask wearing, and they're going to struggle because they're already struggling with who they are and how the world sees them.
Right.
And so to be able to hide, I find the mask to be a bit of a crutch.
Oh, yes.
Especially for shy kids.
Right. Yes.
What do you think of that?
I agree completely. I think it's incredibly detrimental to the psychological development of kids. We were at a grocery store not too long ago. My girls and I would, you know, before more people stopped wearing the masks.
To start as perspective, sure. How old are your girls?
My girls are 10 and 15.
There we go. Okay.
And we don't wear masks anywhere we go ever. We haven't actually through this entire thing. I know. And amazingly, we're still alive.
You're healthy.
And we are healthy. We take good care of ourselves. We're healthy. We breathe fresh air. And even if we had gotten COVID, or even if we do get it at some point, it will be okay. You know, we will get through it. And so we were at the grocery store. We were in the checkout line, and there was a little girl standing next to us with her mom. And the little girl was probably about 4 years old, and she tapped her mom on the arm, and she said, "Mommy, why aren't those people wearing masks?" And it just broke my heart because I thought this little girl thinks that we're the abnormal ones because we're not wearing masks and everyone else in the store.
But only because you're not wearing masks, not because of who you are or anything.
Right, it was because our faces weren't covered.
Yeah.
Everyone else who was covering their faces, they were the normal people. And we were the strange ones because we didn't have masks on.
Yeah.
And her mom literally kind of pushed her behind her and she said, "Honey, just stay away and come stand on the side of me." But I just thought, good golly, we're not
lepers.
It's crazy. So yes, I think the damage that has been done and is being done to kids is going to be irreparable. I think that we're going to see it possibly, you know, in the coming years. But I think kids need to know that we have emotions and we show that on our faces and not just with our eyes. I'm so tired of people saying we can see your smile behind, you know, with your eyes.
Yeah, but what about Botox? I mean, once you Botox, there's nothing going on upstairs. It's all here. All right.
I've never had Botox.
Okay. Moving on. Your experience here at the NRB, what's the highlight for you?
Definitely networking and connections. Well, and you've
Have
been
you
dragging
any?
Me.
You dragged me around
this whole convention, introducing me to people, and it's just incredible. It's what's really neat is that it's a place where people are coming, Christian media, film, radio, people who are getting the message of hope out there, most of them according to the truth of God's word, and really coming together as a family.
I like that, most of them.
Most of them. Not okay. All of them.
Okay.
Most of them really working to impact God's kingdom with the gifts and talents and abilities that God has given them.
Yeah. Yeah, it is heartening to watch people live
very
live out their faith in a sense,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you have a bit of a unique perspective because you're here as a filmmaker with a film
right. That's
nearly ready to launch.
Yes.
So talk to me about that. And do not fail to mention, no, fail to mention who's in the movie.
Sam Sorbo.
What did I just say? Now I have to edit this, bleep.
We, 4.5 years ago, started production on a documentary called Schoolhouse Rocked, The Homeschool Revolution, and it is a documentary all about home education and family discipleship. So it's all about bringing our children out of the public school system, debunking all of the misconceptions and negative stereotypes that people have about homeschooling, and giving them the courage and the tools and resources that they need in order to be able to home educate their children. And parents today, I think they know that there's something wrong. They know there's something going on in
the
schools.
Think?
Yeah.
I mean, you
it's
saw the Loudoun County school board meeting. And two parents
right.
were actually arrested for refusing to leave. And the guy's like, no, the meeting's still going on. The meeting's still going on. He's pointing to his watch because he knew what the schedule was.
Right. It's crazy what's happening right now. And any parent, whether Christian or not, any parent who's paying attention to what's going on in the public school system should be waking up and realizing that they've got to get their kids out. And so if they're going to take their kids out, what is the next option? Well, homeschooling is the best option because God's given us our kids and he has given us everything we need to be able to bring them home and disciple them and teach them according to the truth of God's word. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what the movie is about. It's about really debunking all of those misconceptions. So we basically touch a little bit on public schools and what's happening, but I mean, we almost don't need to do that because if anybody opens a newspaper or watches the news, they know what's happening
yes. In
the public schools right now.
You're almost going to need to update the film in a little
right,
bit.
Right. And sadly, a lot of that is happening in private schools as well. Even, you know, quote unquote Christian schools, not all of them, but a lot of them. And so, you know, these schools are becoming woke, just like the churches are becoming woke. And so parents need to bring them home. They need to understand what's happening in the public school system. And then we touch on all of the different things that keep parents from homeschooling. You know, what about socialization? What about single parents? What about, you know, if I'm not well enough educated to educate my own children? What if I have a child with a learning disability? There are so many things
great.
That are keeping them back. What if my husband is not on board and he's not leading our family spiritually? So all of those things, we address all of them in the movie. So there's a small part of it where we talk about the public schools, but that's really just kind of the villain in the movie. And then the movie goes on to
because you're really trying
issues.
To help people.
Sure, it's a pro homeschool movie,
right? And you just want to help them understand. Hey, it's not as hard as you think it is.
It's not,
and it's more rewarding than you imagine.
It is such a blessing. And
so, where are you now with the film?
We have finished the edit of the film, so the film is done. We're test screening right now, so it's out to a team of people who are testing it and kind of giving us their feedback on this made sense, this didn't make sense, because at this point now it's like proofreading our own book.
Okay.
So
we basically
have people proofreading the movie.
Okay.
And once that's done in a couple of weeks, we will make any corrections we need to make, and then it will go to post-production to have color correction done, the final sound mix, and anything else to just make it look beautiful and pretty.
You're raising money for that,
and
though, right?
We are raising money for that.
And
yes.
So where can people go and find out more information?
Yes, the best way to do that is to go to Schoolhouse Rocked. So the movie is called, did we mention this?
Yes, you did.
It's called Schoolhouse Rocked, The Homeschool Revolution. And our website is Schoolhouse Rocked, R-O-C-K-E-D, schoolhouserocked.com, and people can go to our website and make a tax-deductible donation to help get the movie done and into people's hands. We're hoping for a release early fall, probably November,
right,
of 21.
Right.
So just in a few months.
Fantastic. It's a feature. It's a feature-length
film.
It is. It's 90 minutes.
90 minutes. And Sam Sorbo's in it. And we've got an incredible cast of people. We've got you, Heidi St. John.
You
Carol
edited
Swain.
Me to make me sound smart, right?
Yes. You already sounded smart. We didn't need to edit you to make you sound smart.
But you cut out the bad bits where I swore. And...
Oh, stop. She did it. Swear.
All right. Well, thank you, Yvette
Absolutely.
Hampton.
Thank you.
Schoolhouserocked.com. And this is Sam Sorbo broadcasting from the NRB. For those of you listening on radio or the podcast, I will be right back after a short break. And for those of you watching on video, stay tuned for the next installment. Thanks so much for watching. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Okay, welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. My next guest is a prolific filmmaker, and he's just some random guy, but he started making films.
I'm just random, yeah.
Tim Mahoney joins me. I met Tim actually years ago when he hired my husband to do the documentary voiceover narration for Patterns of Evidence, The Exodus, which was an excellent film. And it started off, it really kicked off a whole series of films.
It did, because of his voiceover.
Entirely because of his voiceover. It had nothing to do with the quality of the filmmaking.
Yeah.
And no, the film Patterns of Evidence, The Exodus, in that film, Tim Mahoney is basically exploring, and the thesis is, if the Exodus never happened, then the Bible's not true. And then we can just give up this whole notion of God and all of that and the rules, and we can all just go to chaos and anarchy, which is really what that argument is. But if we can prove the Exodus, then the opposite would be true. And the fact is that we know that they've never actually disproven anything in the Bible.
Well, that's correct, yeah. I mean, they say absence of evidence isn't, evidence of absence.
See, he's brilliant. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. That's like correlation is not causation, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that it's easy to make that leap thinking that it's true that since you don't have any good solid evidence of the Exodus, we can't believe the Bible. But we know that the Bible is the best documented and most reliable history textbook that the world has, which is why they took it out of the schools, because they don't want to teach history anymore.
And I love history, by the way.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me from Patterns of Evidence, Exodus, where did it go? And then bring me up to current day.
Well, the whole notion of a pattern of evidence is the idea, it's a scientific approach. So the Bible says certain events happen, and can we find that pattern in history? And so I just wanted to clarify that, because what I started to do was to say, okay, what happened during the Exodus, and can we find that pattern? Well, we did find a pattern, but it was at a different time period than what people were saying that it had to be at.
Right. So they're saying that if it happened, it had to have happened this time. And since it didn't happen this time, it couldn't possibly have happened.
Right. So they picked
the time. I loved that part of the movie. I just loved it. And the graphics in the movie were so good. But there's more. There's more. So go
right.
ahead.
So in the middle of all that, because of being an investigative filmmaker, that film took 12 years to make. But I had filmed so much content. And then I heard that the alphabet, and I started getting information that the first form of an alphabet started to show up around that same location. This is in Egypt. So somebody who was not an Egyptian took Egyptian hieroglyphs and, like, the bowl inscription that we have here, took that and turned it into a phonetic alphabet by borrowing Egyptian hieroglyphs and then modifying them into what would become a Semitic language.
So instead of pictures of things, they were pictures of sounds.
Exactly. And so, like ah, or pa, or ka, so now you were taking, and it's genius. In fact, the genius of the alphabet. So this bowl, Aleph, became the letter A.
And just for people on radio, he's holding up his fingers and he's reversing them and
like the letter A.
Because we've got radio and podcast listeners, and so he's basically you morph the symbol in a direction or a different direction, and then it becomes that thing.
The letter A.
And it became the letter A, is basically, yeah.
Right. It was the antlers of a bull with its face, which if you took an A and flipped it upside down.
But you're saying bull.
Yeah, a bull.
As in an animal.
Like a bull. Bull's head with its antlers.
Oh,
up there
a bull with an antlers. Yeah. Okay, I thought you were saying bull. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of a funny looking bull, but okay.
That's my Minnesotan coming out to bull.
Oofta.
Yeah. But the bull's head in Egyptian hieroglyphs then was flipped upside down eventually to become the letter A.
The letter A.
Over time. And so this began the alphabet. And so that film, The Moses Controversy, uncovered the fact that there was a writing system that Moses could have used and that he could have taught to the Israelites, because it says to teach these commandments to your children and write them on, you know, the doors of your home. So this idea of education and passing on information to our families about God's word was given a tool, and that tool was the alphabet. And so my films start to uncover things like that. And then we went to the next film, which was Red Sea Miracle 1, and then became Red Sea Miracle 2, because there's so much about which direction.
So it's Patterns of Evidence, yep. Red Sea Miracle 1, Patterns of Evidence, Red Sea Miracle 2,
you.
And you have a whole library
of
this
features.
Kind of thing, and you have teaching materials for children, you have study guides that go along with this information. I highly recommend it, especially for homeschoolers. No, especially for kids in school.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Can we save them all?
Yes.
Please, can we save them all? Okay.
Well,
so talk to me about your new project.
Right, right. Well, I'll just say this. If you go to patternsofevidence.com, you can sign up to become a thinker. And each week we'll give you information about a Bible and archaeology and become a thinker. And we also started a society, by the way, I want to push this in there, that we're a foundation now, Patterns of Evidence Foundation, and we have a society called the Historical Faith Society. And every month I'm focused on a different area of Bible and archaeology or history. And so we've covered the Dead Sea Scrolls and the digging for the hidden caves of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And this month we're at Shiloh. And we're going to be looking at the star of Bethlehem in the future with astronomy. And so there's just a lot of cool things that are happening. But in the midst of all this, I was...
I wish you were more nerdy.
Do you? I'm not nerdy at all. I'm just interested in finding out...
It is fascinating.
Yeah, I want to know the story. I think I love the story of how we got here. And that's a question of origin.
Yes.
And so I've been working in the... what would be called the Old Testament. I like to call it the First Testament, the first parts of the Bible. But a filmmaker saw in France, an evangelical Christian that's also a filmmaker, saw Patterns of Evidence on Netflix, and they said, hey, is this possible? Look what I had done. And they decided to do that and go to Turkey, to the seven churches in Turkey, and they created this little project called the Light School at Heart. There you go. The Seven Churches of Revelation, Times of Fire. And this is a new feature film that we are helping them I'm helping to release it. I'm the distributor. Thinking Man Films is my production company. And we decided to take their series, which is on the HBO of France, and turn it into films for theatrical release October 11th and 12th. We're going to be in theaters around the nation as a Fathom event. And then we're going to be putting it on worldwide on an e-cinema event for like 30 days.
And by e-cinema, what do you mean?
Well, you're going to be able to log on just like the cinema, and you're going to get the cinema experience, but it's going to be at a particular time. It's not just like a regular platform. It's more like a theatrical showing, but online, so you can stream it on your big screen TV, and then you'll get the panel discussion. Our films are really events. They have a pre-show.
Wait, you're doing a panel discussion? I want to come.
You do? Well, you can come. There's no problem with that. So, yeah, we're going to have a panel discussion.
See how I get myself invited to things?
I never thought but that might be a really good idea. So we'll just have to think about that and talk about that. And so the panel discussion will be discussing, well, what does this mean? And here's the thing. The reason why I love this film is because, first of all, it goes to the very locations, and it looks at the history, the time when these things happened. What was that early church facing? And what we find out is that they were facing a world where they weren't welcome because of who they believed in. Caesar wanted to be worshipped.
God, yeah.
Yeah, he wanted everyone to sacrifice to him and to basically say he was God and he was the supreme. And Christians had come to know Jesus, and they weren't going to do that. They were going to say, no, there is no God but God. And so it was, and Jesus is Lord. This film is about a very important thing that happened. John the Apostle was the last of all the apostles, and he was on the island of Patmos, and he was given a vision, and the Lord came to him and gave him a message for the seven churches in Turkey. And this film examines the archaeology of those locations, the history of them, and how did the early church react. And I would use the word authentic. I believe that we're looking at authentic Christianity. What did that look like? And today, we're challenged, I think, to have authentic Christianity.
To recognize it, even
right,
if
right,
we see it.
Right, right. And so authentic Christianity is something...
Wait, that you looked at me when you said that. What does that do?
I was just looking for affirmation from
okay.
you. Yeah. So authentic Christianity is something that I think that...
We struggle with.
And this film is an investigation not only into the seven churches, but I believe it's an investigation into our own hearts. Are we ready? Jesus says, you know, I'm coming soon. I'm coming back. And so the reason why I like this film and have gotten behind it, and I believe that it's a call for us to examine our hearts. Are we ready for the return of Christ?
Are we ready for the end times is the line that you put at the top of this little flyer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's directed by Etienne Magnin. Well, it's very excited. So it's exciting. You're not in the movie?
No, I'm the English world representative for it.
Gotcha.
So I'm the guy behind, I guess I'm a like executive producer of the film.
Dates again?
October 11th and 12th, 2021. And then it's going to be following with a worldwide release on. So if you live in Australia or, you know, some other part in the world, you're going to be able to see it, but it's going to be as an e-cinema special event. And so, yes, it's a very important film, and I think it's a film...
Where can people go to find theaters where it's going to show?
Okay.
Is it Fathom? Are you doing Fathom?
It's Fathom,
yeah.
Yep. So if you go to thinkingmanfilms.com, you'll see Times of Fire there, and you can go to that part of the website. And if you type in Times of Fire Film, that'll take you to social media, Times of Fire Film. That will also get you to the location.
Okay. And so, actually, we only have a minute left. So how can people go find Patterns of Evidence one more time?
Patternsofevidence.com. You can go there, and you can sign up to be a thinker. You can look at our we have lots
we
of
don't
content.
Want to think. Why would we want to think?
Because it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And
it's mind, not might?
No, mind.
Dang it.
Yeah. There might be some verses about loving the Lord with your might, but no, and I think that's the challenge, Sam. You know what I'm
saying. He looks at me. He thinks that's the challenge, Sam.
Yeah. Well, Sam, you're a thinker, too. I love the fact that you're a sharp person. And I was going to say cookie, but I was going to say that. But you're really
That'll
sharp.
That'll get you banned off YouTube.
Yeah, right. So
call me a cookie.
Yeah. Well, I happen to like dessert, so a cookie is really good for me. So anyway, what I'm going to say is that we do have to love the Lord God with our minds. And there's a lot of stuff that are going on that doesn't make any sense. And I think that this is both a call for people who are faith and people who are not,
yes.
to basically reason and go, wait a minute, what's going on? This is pretty crazy. And I think that the Bible has more solid answers in origin and in where we're going. And a lot
yes.
of people, I want to say
one last
thing is people are afraid. They're not sure what the future is going to hold. And they're starting to feel uncomfortable.
There's a book about that.
Book of Revelation?
Here's the thing. It doesn't make you more comfortable, though. It's kind of weird.
Well, I think the issue is what is your hope in?
Yes. Where do you put your hope?
Where do you put your hope?
Or where do you get your hope?
Yeah. And I think that some people need to be uncomfortable because they might not be in the right place, and they need to get their heart ready Is their heart ready for the return of Jesus Christ? Do they even know Jesus Christ? And I think this film can be a great tool.
Is it a good evangelical tool, like discipleship? Not, maybe not discipleship, but a good introductory tool? Is this a film you want to drag your atheist friends to?
Well, listen, HBO France is showing it, which is fantastic because it's not doesn't scare
France
people off.
France is largely secular.
I know. Can anything come out of France about the Bible? Yes, it has.
And no.
This film is that film, and I think that God's hand is upon it. And I want to say that you could show all sorts of people who don't believe in this, but are probably feeling it in their stomach that there's something scary going on here. And I think that this film is going to point them to the Bible and to Jesus Christ.
That's great. All right, Tim Mahoney, everybody. My guest has been Tim Mahoney. Go to patternsofevidence.com or thinkingmanfilms.com and find out more. And I want to thank you for being here. This is Sam Sorbo. I'm broadcasting from the NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters, in Dallas, Texas. For those of you listening on radio and on podcast, I'll be right back with a fantastic guest who started a mission. Why am I stumbling on that? This is an amazing story. This guy pulled my husband aside this morning and said to him, "You have no idea what Hercules meant to me." Stay tuned. We'll be right back with that. For those of you on video, you're out of luck. You're just going to have to wait for the next installment. This is Sam Sorbo. Be right back. And welcome back. I'm Sam Sorbo. Sam Sorbo Show. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm at the NRB with a very special guest. I'm actually very excited to talk to this individual. Just met him this morning. He started Roar Ministries. He's a redeemed gangster who overcame, and now he seeks to help others break from the chains of bondage of all kinds. And so Sean Smith joins me, and you said something to my husband this morning that just sort of blew us away.
Yeah.
Why don't you just start, if you don't mind, I do want to hear your story.
Okay.
And so you can start there if you want. You don't have to start with this morning. Just start wherever you want and tell us a little bit about your journey, because and now you run a ministry, and so you have a deeper understanding than a lot of us could possibly have, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so start there.
So I got saved in 2004 at a church. I was playing drums for a church for a couple of years, and I was selling weed to the deacons of the church I was playing for.
How precious.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I made $300 a week playing the drums and selling. So it was $120 for the service and $180 from selling drugs to the deacons of the church where I was playing at.
I thought selling drugs paid better than that.
It was small amounts. Like, they couldn't afford big amounts, and they were writing it off on a church check.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah,
okay.
It was wonderful.
So you were like the most expensive drummer in history.
The most expensive drummer in history.
Gotcha.
So I did that for a couple of years, and that was before I got saved. I did it 2002, 2003. 2004, November 16th, 2004 is when I got saved.
Were you pretending to have been saved? Were you?
Not at all.
No, they knew that you weren't saved.
They didn't. When the pastor went up to preach, me and one of the deacons and a couple other musicians would go to the back of the church, walk to the store, smoke, come back, and then when he was ready to close, we would come back in and play. And that's what we did for 2 years.
Okay.
Until my sister came to church and she told me, "You're going to go to hell from the stage." And I said, "Oh, that's pretty
older
accurate."
Sister, younger sister?
Older sister. And I told her, you know, if I'm going, all of them are going too, because this is what they do, this is what they do, this is what they do. So it was very honest, you know.
Yeah.
But even going back forward, and I mean going backwards between that, me and my father didn't get along. So after my mother died in 1993, I was 11 years old. I went mute from 11 to 12.
Mute?
As in I didn't talk. Like, I lost a lot of emotion. I just didn't talk for like almost a year. So at 12.
You had nothing to say to those people.
No, nothing at all. At 12, my father took me to Riverside Hospital, which is a fourth floor Riverside Hospital, which is a mental institution, because he thought I was crazy. They did a psych evaluation, and they told me, the doctors pulled me to the side and said, "Well, you're not crazy, number one. But
your dad,
two,
no.
And honestly,
oh,
that's
seriously?
What happened. That's what they
oh
said. He said, "Now, here's the issue. The issue is we do an evaluation of your father at the same time, and we're going to tell you something. We don't feel safe sending you home. You can, at 12, sign a release form. And if we get your father to agree with it, you can stay here for 6 months. So I stayed in
at the mental facility.
At a mental institution for 6 months. I stayed there receiving treatment for anger because I had severe anger issues and depression. And then when my father came and picked me up after those 6 months, we were driving on the freeway. We went past the exit that I know that we were supposed to go home. And he took me to an adoption center for the next 6 months. So for a year, I spent outside of my house. When he finally picked me up.
Hold on, sorry.
Oh, it's been a long
time. So the anger issues, were they dealt with?
In there, yes. I received a lot of tools and tips on how to deal with anger.
Okay.
And then I was forced to have to go through with the anger again.
Right.
The day I got out.
So more anger, right. Mm-hmm. But initially, you had some healing. You had a certain level of healing.
Yes.
And then he abused you.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
So he took me there. I stayed there for another 6 months. And when I got out, he told me to wash the dishes of his girlfriend. And I told him no. And he kicked me out of the house. And I remembered me and my brother walking in the mall like a year and a half prior and ran into some guys in the mall that my brother was friends with. And my brother told me after meeting these guys, he said, I need you to stay away from them no matter what. Just stay away from them. And I didn't understand why, because they were nice guys. And like, you know, if you ever need us, little man, just tell us.
Yeah.
And I remembered seeing the guys
right
by my school. So after my father put me out, I slept on the street for a couple nights.
You were 13 years old.
13 years old.
Okay, go ahead.
Sleeping on the streets, doing all that stuff, robbing people at gunpoint because I had a little pistol, all that stuff. Like, I was a kid that was, I had issues. And he
he said cavalierly.
Yeah, I had issues, you know. When you've been delivered from this lifestyle, you can kind of talk about it a little freer than, you know. Yeah. So I remember leaving school one day, and I walked across the street, and I saw the guy sitting on the porch that my brother told me to stay away from.
Okay.
And I walked up to his door, and he said, I remember you. But before he said, I remember you, three other guys came around the corner of the house with pistols in their hands and said, do you know who you're walking up on? And I said, no. And he said to me, the main guy said to me, he said, you need somewhere to stay. We've watched where you go. Like, mm-hmm. You,
oh, they've had that. They had their eye on you. Yeah.
So he said to me, you can stay here for a couple nights. Sleep on the couch. Go in there. Take a shower. There's some food in there. There's some clothes. You know, we'll take care of you and all that. So I slept on the couch for a couple days.
Let me ask you something. At 13, mm-hmm. you're a big guy today. Yes. At 13, are you a big guy?
No.
Scrawny?
Yes.
Okay. Scrapper.
Yeah, scrapper.
Okay.
So he asked me to, you know, go in there. I went, took a shower, got myself together. 2 days later, he said, I can do this as long as we need to, but it's going to cost you something. And that day I was initiated into the gang life. And initiation is, you know, you get jumped in, you fight six guys for 2 minutes. And that was the initiation.
And you were scrappy.
Oh, very much.
And you were fighting six guys.
For 2 minutes.
Full-grown guys.
For 2 minutes.
Who were punching you.
Yes.
Fists, not knives.
The only rule that they have is you just can't fall on the ground.
So it's just a beatdown. You just have to stay standing.
For 2 minutes.
While they beat on you.
And fight back. So for 2 minutes, I fought back.
Okay. And you knew that it was coming. They didn't jump you. It was like, this is the setup. This is what's going to happen.
When we say go, this is what's going to happen.
Okay.
And he asked me, he said, do you want anything to drink? I said, I'll take a shot and I'll take a hit of a blunt. Let's go for it.
At 13?
At 13.
Had you drunk before?
Yes.
And you'd had blunts before?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd smoked, drank, and all that stuff. You know, living on the street, kind of got to figure out something.
So it's, I just have to say, a scrappy kid, like, if there's no excuse for what your father did, but to get a visual of what your father did to a scrappy kid, it's a different visual than a dad walking an overgrown 13-year-old big guy who looks like an adult, right? There's a different metric there.
I could show you a picture of me when I was younger.
And there's a different picture of you beating on, you know, getting beaten up by 6 grown men as somebody.
Well, three was between, like, maybe up to like 17. And then the other 3 were adults.
But 17 is still a grown boy, right. Anyway, okay. So I just wanted to make sure I understood the visual. Yeah. So you were a tough kid. I mean, you were tough.
By 11th grade, I was in about 300 fights.
You had been in 300 fights?
By 11th grade.
And you won several of them, or?
A nice amount.
Because I don't imagine, yeah.
It was a nice amount of them. You know, you learn how to fight on the streets. And so I went.
That's a skill set I never developed.
I can't believe it. You know, your husband is like the most skilled fighter in the world.
He pays the guys, you know.
Yeah.
It's a whole different economy.
Yeah, I'm with it.
Okay, so you decided to go to work.
Yeah.
You were initiated into the gang.
Initiated into the gang.
And then you worked your way up and you were successful in the gang.
Yes. I did that for, I think, what, time of salvation. I was in the gangs for over 10 years.
So you were in the gang and playing at a church?
Mm-hmm. Because my mother played the guitar at a church. So that was like the only connection I had to church, really, was my mom.
Oh, but she wasn't around anymore.
Exactly.
But you wanted to go to church to feel like there was still a connection.
Yep.
Isn't that beautiful?
And that was the only church connection
you
I had.
You miss your mom.
That.
I can tell. I mean, that was one of the first things you said to my...
Yeah. And today is her 75th birthday.
Oh, that's right. Today is her birthday. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. But all of the, you know, the gang stuff and everything I went through led me up to becoming the second in command, which means I had to go through a lot of stuff. There was a lot of things I had to do that I'm not proud of, but I wouldn't, you know, it is what it is. I did a lot of dirty things. I've been shot. I've been stabbed. I've been set on fire. I've set houses on fire. I've done a lot of stuff myself, you know, and that was just the lifestyle of it. But I remember every time, even being out there, I went home there to the place that they call it the spot. I would go there at least for 1 hour a day.
Just to check in?
No, to watch your husband for 1 hour a day. The only father I had was your husband when I was a kid.
He never said anything?
Didn't say a word. He was literally, like, I used to tell people I was Hercules' son. Never seen him before. And it was like, for me, that was the stuff that I needed, like, that kept me going. And
what did you get out of it? What,
out of the show?
Yeah, like,
I got a lot of peace out of it.
Just because it made you smile? It made you...
It was funny. It was a lot of fighting. You know, it was good to see fighting in a funny way rather than fighting in the way that I had to see all that stuff, you know?
You think there's value in watching violence that's not real?
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. So, I have 4 boys. I don't mind them watching violent shows if it's comedic. If it doesn't look real.
Right.
The moment it looks real, we turn the TV off.
There's something diabolical about watching real violence.
Yeah. It desensitizes you from what's real.
Were you desensitized?
Extreme.
Yeah.
Like at 17, I was working for some guys who sold major quantity of drugs, and I watched a man get his arm cut off right here in front of me for not giving somebody a certain amount of money. He came into a warehouse where we was at, told the main guy, I'm not paying you anything. The main guy had a machete about this big on his lap. He stood up and just like that. I'm 17 years old. And that was probably the nastiest thing I'd ever saw. But that was one of the things I'll never forget.
Yeah. I've told my kids several times, we don't look at things. We're very careful with what we cast our gaze upon because there are certain things that you can't unsee.
Right. And that's one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't unsee
somebody. I'm not going to be able to unhear that.
I'm so sorry.
So
you're welcome.
You've written a book.
Yes, I wrote a book called Destined to Break the Curse, which is my autobiography. It was telling the entire story And the day I got, when I got saved in 2004, my sister took me to her church. This is in the book.
Okay, before we go there, I need to take a break. So yes, we're going to take a quick break. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. If you're listening on radio and podcast, stay tuned, I think. I'm trying to do a quick calculation. If you're watching on video, you'll have to come back and catch another episode. We'll be right back with my guest, Sean Smith. This is the Sam Sorbo Show, broadcasting from the NRB.
And welcome back to the program. I'm Sam Sorbo, your host, broadcasting from the NRB. And if you want more of that interview with Sean Smith, the gangster turned pastor, it'll be up on sorbos.locals.com, where Kevin and I are forming a community of like-minded patriots. Before I let you go for this show, I just want to point out that Jen Psaki has now said, literally said out loud, quote, "Some people might say that the other party was in favor of defunding the police." Yeah, they would if they were liars like all of you Democrats. Can you believe what these people try to get away with? And the problem is they do get away with it because people aren't hearing the other side of the story, or the truth, I should say, on alternative media like this show. So please share this show with your friends. Get other people to start listening, because over here we deal in truth, but the lamestream media tends to deal exclusively in the lies of the left. And also, don't forget to pick up a copy of my book, Words for Warriors, available, yes, at Amazon, but honestly, go to samsorbo.com for all of my great content. And thanks again for joining me. This is Sam Sorbo, broadcasting from the National Religious Broadcasters in Dallas. I've had a great time. I hope you have. I'll catch up with you next week.